Roczen looked at the three people who were to accompany him on the long march to northern Wyoming and the convention. They all stood next to their hybrids, strong, sturdy beasts, chosen for their pure physical power and endurance, now loaded to the hilt with supplies, weapons, sleeping gear, tents, medicine, and gourds of water. Rock had picked Chen as his number two. It had been a hard choice, but the Doomsday Warrior had decided that he had to have the absolutely toughest man, bar none, along for the ride, especially since he would be playing nursemaid for a 42-year-old woman and a 55-year-old man.
Ready?
Yeah. Keep an eye on these two.
Both of the warriors turned their gaze to Terry Goldman and smiled. With her pith helmet, khaki skirt, bag of cameras and lenses on one side of her saddle, and fruit and bread on the other in a big wicker bag, she made quite a sight. So it was going to be a picnic after all. Terry mounted up with one even jump onto her large brown hybrid, which was nearly as wide as a table and had thick, leathery skin with just a thin, matty layer of hair to protect it and give warmth. Dean Keppel had donned standard free-fighting camouflage slacks and jacket, and the same thick-soled black boots that Rock wore. He seemed to be having a bit of trouble getting seated.
Haven't been riding too much lately, Mr. Roczen.
His foot had somehow become twisted in the stirrup, and he was stuck in midair, one leg raised at an abnormally high angle.
Here, let me help you, sir.
Rock caught the Dean's other leg and lifted him with a quick motion.
Whoa!
Keppel flew up into the saddle and almost over the other side. At last, he righted himself.
Well, guess I got the hang of it now.
Rock quickly gave both of his compatriots a lesson in the supplies on the bridge, including the Liberator automatic rifle and the small grenade pack located in a long leather case that ran alongside the saddle and down the steed's back.
All right, let's head out.
The four delegates rode down the long, stone-walled tunnel that was one of Century City's main thoroughfares to the outside world. A farewell committee of about 50 of their closest friends and relatives stood at the mouth of the final exit and made their emotional goodbyes. Rona grabbed Rock and closed her arms around him as if she would never let go. Chen's young wife, Chun Li, stood in front of the Chinese warrior, gazing deep into his dark eyes. Her long, midnight black silky hair fell nearly to her slim waist.
Come back to me, my love.
At last, the camouflage tarp was pulled aside. And then the steel cable mesh fence, painted and twisted so as to resemble a close growth of vines, was open. Roczen led the party, Chen taking up the rear, dressed in his toe-to-neck black ninja suit and kung fu shoes. Within the puffy sleeves of his jacket were hidden weapons, knives, star knives, potions, smoke pellets. The man was a machine of hidden death. The gates of Century City slid slowly back with a low whine. Rock turned around in his saddle to look from about 100 yards away. Amazing. Just the side of a mountain. Even after all these years, he couldn't see a trace of a seam or anything unnatural.
Easy, boy. Easy, Snorter.
The Palomino had been Rock's steed for years. It was unusually smart, coming at a whistle, capable of tremendous speed when necessary, unusual for the big creatures. And it had an uncanny knack for locating water, even in the midst of absolute nothingness. The Brid had even saved Rock's life once when he fell, poisoned from a forest of thorns, dragging him off into the shade and standing guard over him for nearly 2 days. Roczen had thought the hybrid lost when he had made his assault on Pavlov City and had had to leave the animal on a nearby cliff. But lo and behold, when the Doomsday Warrior finally made his way back to Century City nearly a month later, there was Snorter, as calm as could be, eating grass by the ton and looking at Rock with a "what took you so long" expression. He stroked the steed's golden white mane, which hung down from its neck nearly halfway to the ground. Within minutes, the mountain that stood above Century City faded into the distance as they headed down through the thick forest into the lower hills to the north. Rock's heart sang along with the songs of the birds and the owls, the songs of the ferrets and the foxes and the wolves, all moving in the dance of life and death in a symbiotic harmony. Every time he came out, the land around Century City seemed richer. Many of the forest creatures had developed the chameleon-like trait of being able to change their coloration from day to night to blend in. Their surface shades would slowly alter, fine-tuning to the amount of light being sent down from above. Mother Nature, in her infinite wisdom and compassion for life on Earth, as much as mankind had tried to destroy it, was nurturing these favorable mutations, giving the animals new ways of defending themselves, of surviving.
God knows we hardly deserve a second chance. The humans of the century before certainly made a mess of things. The Reds made the first strike, with a mood of paranoia, fingers on the trigger waiting for the slightest noise from the other side. Been set in motion by both sides for many years before the Great War.
You know, It's such a shame that so much beauty was lost, perhaps forever. I wish everyone hadn't been so damn stupid. It was like giving babies matches to play with.
And still, they did set it off. Perhaps somehow mankind would have muddled its way through if the Reds hadn't gotten so damn greedy. There's no pleasure in hating the Reds as we do, but we must hate them for now. For what they've done to our land, for what they did to my family. And I must kill them, as surely as one would kill a swarm of megapedes if they invaded your bedroom.
Terry shuddered at the mention of megapedes. She had only distantly seen the dark, slimy things, nearly 2 feet long, with uncountable numbers of moving little stalks of feet, searching, looking for any sort of food. Even human, if they could get their poison into the prey, slow it down enough so they could be latched onto, and little pieces of flesh ripped out again and again until their hunger had been satisfied. No, Terry didn't want to think about them at all.
Please, could we change the subject? Must we always talk about war and death and little monstrosities? Come, let's make this a good expedition, a friendly expedition, a happy expedition.
Roxanne blanched. The woman was a joke. How she had made herself so powerful, so influential in Century City, was beyond him.
Now, Mr. Roxanne, do tell me, what kind of flowers are those over there?
Animals scurried, startled by her sudden bark. Rock leaned around to look at her as she pointed excitedly to a large grove of flesh-colored flowers, each a foot in diameter, looking like some sort of large seashell opened wide to collect the black rays of the night. She caught his eye and smiled sweetly, her overly made-up face pancaked, quite white, her lips bright red.
It's a moon breeder. Blooms at night. Also eats mice, small rodents, and even rabbits, as I myself have seen several times. During the full moon, the plants breed. They actually sing to one another, very high-pitched, to attract a mate. When two of them sing the same tune, they detach from their stalks, roll to the ground, and breed.
Breed?
Yeah, you know. Fuck.
Oh.
Once I was sleeping near a grove of them, and the damn thing started making quite a racket. So I just sat up and watched them. They fell off by the dozens and hit the ground, rolling toward their selected mates, singing louder and louder as if they were really happy about the whole damn thing. Then they made contact and extended tendrils around each other. Then the male extended a long, fleshy pseudopod and...
That will be quite enough, Mr. Roxon, if you please. And what is so funny, Mr. Chen?
Nothing.
Chen had seen Rock command the trust and total respect to the point of worship of the toughest and most hardened fighters. But here, a middle-aged, pancaked blonde had told Rock in no uncertain terms to shut up. Chen wished the other men of the Rock Squad could see this. Maybe the trip would be more interesting than he had thought.
And what about those?
She pointed to a different sort of growth, a shining silver cactus-like plant that seemed to come right out of the solid rock of a large, fallen boulder. There were hundreds of them poking out like soft quills of a porcupine.
Oh, those? You don't want to know about those. What do they look like?
Oh, what do they... Oh, is that all you men think about?
Not us men, Terry. Nature. It's what nature thinks about. Haven't you ever read Darwin, my good woman? Sexual selection, survival of the fittest, all that stuff. Those who, you'll pardon the expression, screw, are the ones who procreate. Virgins become extinct.
Why, I...
Ms. Goldman kicked her bread, and the creature obligingly lurched forward with a jolt, and headed up the narrow trail at a slow gallop.
Help me! Please help me!
Rock sat calmly and smiled at her as she flew by.
Aren't you going to rescue her?
She'll have to learn how to ride. Might as well do it now. Like I said, this ain't no picnic.
They moved through the night like some sort of intergalactic mist. Blue, hazy, skimming along the radioactive sands of the open wastelands. They were and were not. Each was itself and the others. There was a circle between them. A circle of unbroken energy that hummed and crackled with life. They felt all that the others felt. They saw all that the others saw. Their lives were inextricably linked together, closer than any man and woman or mother and child. They had lived each other's lives from the moment they were born, had joined the circle. All that they had ever known, all that they thought, their pleasures and pains, their genetic ancestral memories, all were common ground for the people, known to the rest of mankind as the Glowers. The people were out tonight, far from their homeland. There was an evil about to be committed, a blasphemy yet again perpetrated on the people and the substance of America. The people knew it. They knew all that had happened and all that would happen. Created from some unknown force, perhaps an entirely new species, unlike any other that had ever existed. The Glowers had evolved over the last century into more of a configuration of energy patterns than flesh and blood. They still had bodies, if one could call fleshless hulks with their entire musculature and organ systems on the outside, clearly pumping and undulating a body. Their brain tissue fissured and twisted in thought and communication. It was as if nature had played a trick on these mutant creatures, putting everything that had been inside human beings on the outside. Even their souls. Their virtually open flesh crackled with a sheen of blue electricity, circling them, sliding endlessly across them, dulling and brightening again as they moved and spoke. Their touch, the merest touch of that blue energy to any living thing, meant instant death. Yet in all their years, they had never killed an American, only the Red Troops. And even then, only when the Russians had foolishly attacked an encampment of Glowers. But that had been years before. The Reds had quickly learned that the Glowers meant death to all who came near. Bullets couldn't harm them, nor flame, nor gas, nor any of the vast weaponry that the Russians had heaped upon them in the middle of the post-war century. The blue energy circling their bodies stopped anything from coming in from the outside world, any weapon or any flesh. They couldn't even touch one another, physically at least. Thus their psychic communication had developed to an intense degree. Nor could they eat. Food would vaporize at their touch. But somehow their evolution into such a high energy state had also altered their energy absorption system, so that they took in all their sustenance from the rays of the highly radioactive soil all around them, for their home was in the most devastated part of the country, possibly the hottest land on Earth. The Glowers, of all creatures on the planet, thrived on that which killed life. Just walking across the mega red ground on which they lived gave them their food, their energy supply. None of them ate. They neither procreated nor died. They existed, pure beings in the here and now. They had felt the evil growing when all the people joined in the large circles and they merged into the perfect one. They had begun feeling the evil a year before, had sensed it, and then followed it with their hearts. The Free Fighters were about to hold perhaps their most important meeting ever. The Glowers knew the outer world, knew of the battles between the Free Cities and the Russians. They had never interfered. Theirs was not the way of death. They were the new evolution into a more perfect state of harmony with all things. Yet even those who had evolved with the very concept of non-interference with humans as the tenet of their spiritual philosophy could stand by no longer. Times were changing. That was part of the evil. But the evil could be stopped, and the good could be released. That was the way. The Free Fighters were trying to recreate the spirit of America at a convention they were holding in the Northlands. The Glowers knew where it was. They knew all who were coming, even the Roxxon. And they knew that the Russians had planted a spy in the very midst of the convention. A man who right now was transmitting coded messages back to his KGB bosses in Denver. To Colonel Kilov, the man who was so despised that they could feel the very fear of him emanate from the 75 million slave workers in the Red Fortress factories. The Glowers knew that the chance for America to reclaim itself, to be restored to a more perfect harmony, was doomed. Unless the people ripped through the night on their shadowy craft, skimming across the glowing wastelands that no human being had ever seen. Land where the earth actually moved and writhed like a snake in pain, so wounded had it been by the bombs. The Glowers lived in this worst of these lands, in the hottest of the killing radiations. When the Reds had sent over their flaming spears of death, raining down by the thousands, they had unwittingly set in motion forces that would now come back to fight them, to challenge them, to help destroy them. The Glowers. Evolution never forgets, and time brings revenge.
How do you think they're doing?
Dean Keppel's obviously in pain.
What tipped you off? The complaining or the bitching?
I have to hand it to Ms. Goldman, though. She hasn't complained even once.
Yeah, I'm impressed. Usually, one's first time on a hybrid leaves him sore for weeks. Still, we're about to hit some rough territory ahead. Let's keep a close eye on the pair.
Oh, I think between the two of us, we should be able to make a safe delivery. I'll keep my lasso ready in case one of them heads off a cliff.
Roxxon kept the lead, not traveling quite at the pace he would have if it had just been himself and Chen, but still moving along at a good pace. They rode for hours at a time, stopping for 15 minutes and then moving on, in cycles that seemed to stretch on endlessly. On the fourth day out, they began entering a strange new terrain. The ground became nearly orange in color, the hue of a bright pumpkin. Rock took out his rad meter, but it didn't register very high. They moved on to the soft, porous dirt, the brids whinnying and skittish as they found it hard to get a good foothold. Nearly everything in this zone of land was the same color. Bushes, trees, even several small squirrel-like creatures they got a glimpse of, flying from tree to tree, using two tails to steer. The orange zone lasted for about 20 miles, and then they hit more low, jagged hills. These obviously created by the debris thrown up from a nearby nuke blast. Thousands, millions of small rocks had almost melted into one another, forming a surface that was sharp on the top and fused together into a solid mass just an inch deep. The hybrids had more hard going as the sharp stones cut into their hooves, themselves virtually steel hard. They pranced and tried to find smooth surfaces to come down on, without much luck. Here, nothing seemed to live. They were in a wasteland of black and gray fist-sized stones. It was as if the entire planet were made of this razor-sharp rock as it stretched on in every direction. The rads were quite a bit higher here, going into the 20s on the meter, which was calibrated to go up to 100. Most of the Free Fighters had taken over the top dose numerous times and seemed none the worse for wear. Rock himself had been exposed to such high doses that he should surely be dead. But he wasn't. Part of the genetic structure of the evolving Homo mutation species was very high resistance to radiation. Even Dean Keppel and Ms. Goldman, though not able to take the high doses the Free Fighters could, had radiation shielding cells in their flesh. Otherwise, such a journey would have been unthinkable. The Reds had never evolved such radiation resistance. Since their invasion of the United States, they had stayed as much as possible inside their fortress cities, with slave labor sectors, factories, and military defenses built within one immense walled structure, capable in some cases of holding as many as 500,000 people. Within their own quarters, they had movies, special kitchens, and whorehouses staffed with the prettiest of young slave girls. So the army had no particular reason or inclination to settle the wilds, as they referred to them. When they went out, it was in convoys, wearing full-body radiation suits and breathing through oxygen masks. Thus, paradoxically, though the Reds had taken over America, the army that came to conquer her had itself grown soft and lazy, while the free fighters had been bred stronger and tougher than any human who had ever existed. America, a virtual laboratory of nuclear-charged evolution. Roxxon was at the vanguard of that new evolution, and his powers and abilities had only begun to be known, even to himself. On the fifth day out, they saw what appeared to be an immense bomb crater's rim wall, which stood as tall and fierce as the day it was created. They could see it from miles away, like some sort of totem to the god of death, taking up more and more of the horizon as they drew close.
Must be one of the super bombs the Reds sent over.
Super bombs?
Yeah. Supposedly, they had secretly stockpiled 20, Tsar Bombas, I think they call them. Each over 100 megatons. Most destructive weapon ever seen on the face of this Earth.